With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone. Chris McPherson and Fran Duffy here for another edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. We are in Indianapolis, day two of the NFL Scouting Combine. Fran, how are you enjoying Indy so far?
That's another great trip, man. It's another beautiful night here in Indianapolis. I know that when we left the hotel this morning to go to our breakfast, which is a ritual, daily ritual here.
Yes, indeed.
In Indianapolis, one of our favorite local restaurants. As you could see on our Facebook page and our Twitter account, at Eagles Shows, we did our little breakfast preview. When we walked out the door, on my phone, it said it feels like negative 24 degrees. So it gives you an idea of what we're dealing with here in the elements.
Chilly, 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 to say the least. So tonight's show is going to be an offensive line tight end preview because they're going to start the on-field drills on Friday. So we figure we're going to dig deep into those position groups, and we're going to have Lance Zierlein. He's going to be our Mr. Relevant. He's great at analyzing the offensive line positions. He's also been doing some great breakdowns of all the players for NFL.com. So we're going to get into his scouting process for the players and some possible offensive line fits for the Philadelphia Eagles. And we're going to introduce you to a couple of the prospects who are here at the NFL Scouting Combine. But first, let's get into the news of the day in our Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
Before we get into the headlines, one thing we're going to add to the show tonight is something we're going to call Fran Against the Machine. And it's we're going to look at Fran's top five position rankings and compare them to some of the other draft experts. But first, let's do the headlines. NFL Network's Mike Mayock said that Delaware tight end Nick Boyle opened his eyes, quote-unquote, at the Senior Bowl and said that there aren't that many great inline blockers and strong receivers in the NFL anymore, like a Brent Celek, and said that Boyle is a 270-pound guy who thought they had a better Senior Bowl week than actual during-the-season performance. Your take on Nick Boyle, who, look, I'm a Drexel alum, so I'm not going to look highly on anyone from the University of Delaware. I'm going to get that bias out of the way up front. But how is he as a player, Fran?
You know, Nick Boyle, I think when I watched him back in the fall, I wasn't expecting much going in. And I came away very impressed. You know, at 6'4", 270 pounds, I really liked the dimensions that he brings to the field are something that you don't often see, as Mayock alluded to. You know, you see the ability to win at the point of attack as a blocker. He's got a good frame. I mean, he's 268 pounds. He's got big hands. He's got pretty long arms. He's got a great wingspan. So, you know, from a blocking standpoint in the run game, he really brings a good amount of value there. And then as a receiver, he showed really good, you know, really reliable hands. I thought he did a really good job with his body control, showing the ability to bring down, you know, adjust to poorly thrown footballs down at the Senior Bowl. The only thing is that he's not a great athlete. So while he's a reliable receiver, he's not, you know, one of these guys that's going to win in space consistently. So that's going to be the big thing with Boyle.
So the main thing with him, in your estimation, is you've kind of seen the best of him, but he'll have to rely on that route running, that ability to find the holes in coverage at the next level.
At least athletically. I mean, yes. You know, I think that he's good in terms of lateral movement. I think he's got some deceptive movement, but he's just, you know, coming out of the blocks, he's not one of those explosive, like, point A to point B, wow, really sudden athletes. So that's the big question, I think, with Boyle.
Okay, our next headline, another Mike Mayock item, called Lyle Collins of LSU the best right tackle prospect in the entire draft class. I like Lyle Collins. He basically has been molding his game in the likes of Jason Peters. Very athletic. He could have been drafted a year ago, decided to come back, wanted to get a little stronger, wanted to mature a little bit. Everything you read about him is, you know, he's the type of guy that you got to lock out of the building at LSU. Your thoughts on Collins, who you did get to see at the Senior Bowl as well?
Yeah, and I was surprised to see Mike call him a right tackle. I think that he's got the ability to stay on the left side as a pro. You know, some people think he's a guard too, but just in terms of his body type, and again, I'm not saying that this is who he is as a prospect, but just in terms of his body type and his movement, because he's very, very athletic, he reminded me of the Dallas Cowboys' Tyron Smith, just in the way that he moved. And obviously, Tyron Smith is one of the most athletic tackles in the game. You know, at 6'4", 305 pounds, a really impressive guy for that size, his ability to play in space. And I think, as Mike alluded to, he's very good at the point of attack. The big question with Collins, can he consistently play with good technique? And that's one of the big issues.
All right, we have a couple headlines regarding the tight end position. Now, one, you're going to be thinking, isn't he a wide receiver? Dorrell Green Beckham, the talented but troubled pass catcher from Oklahoma, even though he played his college football really at Missouri, checked in at 237 pounds, pretty much the same size dimensions as Calvin Johnson did. But the question here is, should he make the move to the tight end position?
Yeah, I mean, that was thrown around on Twitter a lot this morning as we were waiting for all of the interviews to start in the media room. And, I don't know that I would go that far yet. I mean, we'll see how he does in the drills on Saturday, athletically, before we say, like, you know, we're going to move this guy to the inside as a tight end. But regardless, I mean, what you've got with this guy is a matchup nightmare for opposing defenses. Just with his size, I think he's going to run pretty well for 37 pounds. For what it's worth, he would have been the lightest of the tight ends that weighed in this morning.
Extremely light.
Yeah, exactly.
For a tight end,
at 237 pounds, at 6'6", that's an issue.
Now, size comparison to Calvin Johnson, but athletically, Calvin Johnson jumped off the charts at his combine workout. So
and ran out of the gym without his own shoes.
That's correct. So our last headline here, it comes from NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah, former Eagle Scout. He called DJ Humphreys his number one offensive tackle and said on Twitter that the only thing keeping Humphreys from being his top OT previously was his size. Well, he checked in at 6'5", 307 pounds. That works for Jeremiah, making him his top offensive tackle.
I mean, I could see it because of the athleticism. And the kid was the top high school offensive line when he came out of high school in 2011, at 6'5", 307 pounds. Like DJ said, you can see that he started to add some weight, but he looked very skinny when you watched him in college. So to see him add that weight already is a really good thing. But the guy can play in space. He looks to finish blocks. He has some positional versatility, but really his athleticism, his toughness, you really like to see that. The issue with him has been durability, and that's been a big issue for him at Florida. He only started 19 games there as a Gator.
All right, well, we're going to transition into our top five position rankings. But first, we're going to start with the offensive line, since they're going to be taking the field for the workouts tomorrow. Fran, in your estimation, what makes a top offensive lineman? What does it take to be an NFL lineman?
Well, you know, I think there are three things that you can look at, and this is something that I've kind of developed over the last few years, and that's, can a guy on the offensive line be fly? And when I say fly, I mean FLI.
Like, I was going to say.
Not FLY. Now, you are fly, but can an offensive lineman be fly? First for the F, low for L, and I as an inside. So can he be the first guy to initiate contact? Can he be the low man? Because, you know, you learn from Pop Warner on, low man wins. And then can you have your hands inside? Regardless of how athletic you are, how big and powerful you are, how talented you are, if you're the first man to initiate contact, if you're the low man, with playing with good pad level, playing with good knee bend, and if you've got your hands inside consistently, you're going to be able to control more matchups more often than not. So, when you look at the offensive line play, I would start with those three things. And obviously, look, there are lots of different things in terms of, you know, strength at the point of attack, the ability to finish blocks. Competitive toughness goes so far for an offensive lineman, abilities in pass protection, your feet and things like that. There are obviously much more to the position, but those are three things that, to me, go a long way.
All right, so we'll start with the offensive tackle position. So we took Fran's top five rankings.
As it stands right now, as a precursor.
Yes. All right. I think all the rankings here are subject to change.
I don't want to get called out in a few months for, you had this guy number three in February.
Back on February 19th, sure. Exactly. So we have Mike Mayock, Mel Kiper Jr. from ESPN, Josh Norris, our friend from Roto-World, and Joel Klatt from Fox Sports.
Okay.
So that's who we compared it against. So let's look at Fran Duffy's top five offensive tackles, and you start with Iowa's Brandon Scherff, who really, really was impressive during his media interview today and talking about his physical exploits from a strength perspective. The offensive line did have the bench press today. Seems like that he could fit the mold.
Yeah, and there was a lot that was made of his bench press reps. It was only at 23. So, to me, that doesn't mean a whole ton. Like I said, the bench press, I think it's more a matter of, how is he in the weight room? Not that I think that Scherf isn't good in the weight room. We've seen a lot of offensive linemen over the years. I was actually going to make a list for the podcast, but, lots of other things getting ready for the show. But, there have been lots of offensive linemen over the years that haven't put up, top level bench press numbers in terms of being the top five in their class that have gone on to have nice careers. So it doesn't worry me too much with Scherf.
I'm trying to think. There was a couple of numbers that were floating around on Twitter earlier of other things that he had posted in other weight events. I'm trying to look it up on Twitter.
Well, he was again, and I know Bo Wolf is going to be all over this. But
here we go.
He was in the freak list for Bruce Feldman. So, he had a 1.58 ten yard dash, a 5.15 in the 40, which is about middle of the road for an offensive lineman, but a 32-inch vertical jump, which is very impressive, shows that lower body explosiveness. But the kid, all his life has been a crazy athlete. I mean, he was a high school quarterback. He threw mid-80s as a baseball pitcher. He averaged a double-double in basketball, won states in shot put, lettered in tennis. I mean, a crazy athletic background for Brandon Scherf.
His one-rep max in the hang clean, 480 pounds.
There you go.
So that's about three Fran Duffies or so?
Give or take.
All right, so your number two tackle, Andrews Pete from Stanford. Number three, Jake Fisher from Oregon. Number four, we've already talked about, Lyle Collins. And number five, Pittsburgh's TJ Clemming, someone else who you got to see at the Senior Bowl as well. Not a ton of experience at this point.
Yeah, not a ton of experience. And one of the things with Collins and Clemmings is just cleaning up that technique. And I think that those guys have higher upsides than a guy like Jake Fisher, no question about it. But I think Jake Fisher has the athleticism. When you look at all the boxes, you're checking off boxes with Jake Fisher. He's got athleticism. He plays with toughness. He's got some power. I think he's got some functional strength. And I think he's got really good technique. He's really clean as a player. And he's got the positional versatility as well. Played guard, played on the left side, played on the right side. So I think he's got a lot of value in a lot of different ways. That's why I have Fisher above those two guys right now. But again, I really like Lyle Collins. I really like TJ Clemmings. So that's a good group.
Fran's
of tackles
got love
overall.
For everyone.
I like everyone. I've got a lot of love to give.
The consensus top five had Brandon Scherf at number one. Lyle Collins and Andrews Pete were tied for number two. Number four was Clemmings, and then Eric Flowers was actually number five.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, and Flowers is a guy that I really liked when I watched him on tape too, because a guy that very impressive at 300 and almost 330 pounds, the way that he's able to move in space, and he ended up being the winner of the bench press for the offensive line group. I don't think he did not eclipse 40, but a guy that, like I said, just looks really, really good in space, has that functional strength to win at the point of attack. I really like Eric Flowers. And Andrews Pete, we didn't get a chance to talk about yet. I think Andrews Pete, watching him last year as a sophomore, I thought that there was a lot that he needed to work on, and I think he still does have a ways to go, but I think he's got as high an upside as any offensive lineman, really, that we've seen in the draft in the past few years. He's got great feet. I think he shows plenty of power. He works to finish blocks. I think he's just got to continue to be more consistent with that technique.
NFL bloodlines comes from him
sure
as
thing.
Well. So. The other name that was mentioned a couple different places, Cedric Obuehi from Texas A&M. He is coming off the ACL, so obviously that's something that has to be figured out. And we saw last year how Brandon Thomas was affected with his draft stock by the ACL injury. What's your take on Obuehi?
Well, if you go by my fly standards,
okay,
he is often not the first to initiate contact. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago, as that was one of the big issues I had with him. Pad level is often, it's up and down. And hands inside, they're not always inside. So I think that's when you look at Obuehi, athletically, I think he's got really good feet. He's got some versatility as can play on the left, can play on the right, can play inside a guard. I think he's got a lot of upside, but he's still got a ways to go. When you look at some of these other prospects at the position, the guys that we've already talked about, Tyler Sambrello from Colorado State as well, even a guy like Rob Havenstein from Wisconsin, who's, one of those prototypical right tackles, even though I don't think there's much of a difference between the left tackle and right tackle spot. I think Obuehi sits behind those guys a little bit from that perspective.
All right, let's transition to the interior of the offensive line. Now, some of the experts did separate categories for guard and center. You just combined both. You just did interior line.
That's right.
All three positions. And you have former Oregon player Ronis Grassu at number one, played center for them, but could play guard as well.
I think so, yeah.
You have A.J. Cann at number two. Lakin Tomlinson at number three, Cam Irving, number four, and Shaq Mason at number five.
Shaq Mason, who didn't get a combine invite, so was, I thought, one of the biggest snubs for the game or for this event here. But Grasso was a guy that, look, I mean, you look at his athleticism, his competitive toughness. He was very, very durable during his time in Oregon until late in his senior season where he suffered an injury. But started 52 games there for the Ducks at 6'3", 297 pounds. Like I said, has that athleticism. Wanted to be in the NBA as a kid. His Kobe Bryant was his idol growing up. But really understands leverage. Can get on the outside on the perimeter runs. He's got really great feet and pass pro. I think he slides very, very easily. So Grasso was a guy I really, really liked. And A.J. Cann, I think in space he's not – you know, he's not great in space, but for a power scheme, teams that want to get some movement at the point of attack, A.J. Cann's your guy.
Okay, so looking at the composites, the one name that's missing, Trey Jackson. He came in tied for fourth. Cam Irving was number one overall. Number two, A.J. Cann. Now, Brandon Scherff, he received some votes. He didn't quite crack the top five, but some people, like Josh Norris, I'm sorry, put Brandon Scherff there as the number one guard. But also as a number two tackle. Also making the list here, I mentioned Trey Jackson. Laken Tomlinson was also theirs. And then Ronis Grasso also on the list. So pretty much the one main name missing there was Trey Jackson.
Yeah, and Jackson was a guy that had ton of high praise for this kid coming into the senior season. And, a lot of people thought that he was a possible first-round pick, lined up at right guard for Florida State, was a really efficient mover off the snap. I thought he showed really good initial quickness. He plays with good pad level in the run game, plays with good pad level in the pass game. He plays with an edge. You know, he's one of those guys that looks to finish blocks. The only thing is that I don't know that he's a great athlete. He's not really great laterally. Not one of those quick twitch guys at the offensive line position. His hands can get a little bit outside, so the technique's up and down. I expected him to get a little bit more movement than he did in the run game, but again, with this the offensive line, I've only gone through a couple games each, so some of these guys may slide a little bit here and there. But Jackson, and look, we went down to the Senior Bowl, and I thought he actually had a pretty good week down there, so he's a guy that might move up a little bit. And one guy that we didn't mention, Andy Gallick from Boston College, is a really athletic guy. That unfortunately missed the Senior Bowl with an injury, but I think he's a guy that can bring some value as well on the inside.
Okay. Believe it or not, actually, Mel Kiper and Joel Klatt had him in the center ranking. So,
there we go.
So he is definitely on the radar. Let's transition to the tight ends. Before we get into the top five, you know, we've seen, speaking of Eagles here, James Casey was released on Thursday. So Eagles were very strong at tight end, very deep position group. Especially with Trey Burton playing so well, not just in the preseason, but during the season on special teams, scoring a touchdown in the regular season finale. What in your estimation what does it take to be a good tight end in today's NFL when it seems like there's more emphasis on the pass catching than ever before?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you want, first of all, is a guy who's a reliable hands catcher. And, you know, when I say hands catcher, I mean just the ability to be able to pluck the ball away from your frame. You look at what happened in the Super Bowl and that play where, you know, we're not going to blame Lockett 100%. Obviously, it wasn't a great ball. People will, point to lots of different reasons why that play didn't work. But, if Lockett had gone in a little bit stronger, had shown the ability to pluck the ball with his hands as opposed to waiting for it to come into his body, who knows, it may have ended a little bit differently. So I think, number one, you're looking for a guy who's got reliable hands. You want to see a guy who can adjust to the ball, poorly thrown balls that can, that can pull it in for away from his frame. Number three, I think you want a guy that shows the ability to separate at the top of his stem. So, and there's a couple different ways you can separate. Some guys separate with quickness, and that's a big thing. So you look at a guy like Max Williams, I think he separates at the top of his stem very, very well. And other guys separate with their frame. So you look at a guy like Jesse James, 6'7", 33-inch long arms. He's got a great wingspan. He separates because he's got great length. And then look, in the blocking game, you're looking for guys that give good effort. I think at the college level, blocking is a little bit of a lost art for the tight end position, but you want a guy who can play in, some of these guys play in line, but a lot of these guys have to be able to block on the outside as well, and that's where they're asked to do. I think a guy like Max Williams is asked to block from the slot. He's asked to block in line. Sometimes he lined up in the backfield, and he showed the ability to be, showed the tenacity, showed the toughness, and showed the willingness to be a factor in the run game.
So Max Williams was the overall number one across the board on everyone's list. No question there. Clive Walford comes in at number two overall. He was your number two tight end as well. Number three, Jeff Huerman. Number four, you have Tyler Croft, who we're going to hear from actually a little bit later in the show. And then you just mentioned Jesse James comes at number five on your list.
Yeah, Clive Walford had a great week at the Senior Bowl. Was one of the better players down there. Kind of reminded me a little bit of a C.J. Fedorowicz who we saw go in the fourth round last year. I think he's better than Fedorowicz, but just in the terms of what he brings to the game, he's got a great frame. He's athletic. He showed the ability to be a good route runner down in Mobile. Huerman is a guy who I think is a little bit underrated. I think he would have gotten a little bit more pub had he gone to the Senior Bowl. He's bowed out because of an injury, but will put up really good athletic numbers. He did a good jump on the bench press today. Was one of the better tight ends in that drill. So a guy, Huerman, who I think has got some ability. Tyler Croft is a guy who's very, very intriguing. He's a local kid from the Philadelphia area, from Downingtown, 6'6", 246 pounds. I would expect him to run as well as any tight end in this draft class when it comes time to run the 40 tomorrow. And, I think, look, again, he's not this guy. But the way that he moves, he's very much like a Zach Ertz in terms of his size, his length, his ability to go up and get the football, and his overall athleticism. And Jesse James talked about, look, he's a big kid. He's 6'7", 261 pounds. I expect him to be a little bit better of a blocker than he was, but he's got the frame. He's got the ability. Really, the question is, can he improve as a blocker and be more consistent with his hands?
So the couple names from your list that are missing on the consensus list, Nick O'Leary from Florida State came in third. Huerman was number four, and then a tie for number five. We talked about Tyler Croft, but Gene Siffrin from UMass, who a little bit older.
He'll be 27 years old during training camp. I think he turns 28 during the season. But look, he came in at 6'5". He was listed 6'7" by UMass. Had offers from a number of different schools. Took some time away from the game. He lined up at a number of different spots. Has good hands, can separate. But look, the guy doesn't. He has very limited experience, not just playing football, but just the tight end position in general. I think there's a lot that he's going to have to work on, and he does not offer much as a blocker. So I think he can play a role for sure, but with these other guys being as complete as they are, that's why he missed my top five. And Nick O'Leary is a guy I really like too. A true throwback player. I think he'll be a better fit for a team that uses multiple tight ends because of his jack of all trades qualities. I think he's got his lack of length really hurts him and his ability to be an every down player along the line of scrimmage. He's going to be, he came along and I think he's got the shortest arms. He's got the smallest hands. He's on the shorter side at 6'3" flat. So, his size overall is what's going to limit him in terms of his value on draft day.
All right, so those are the top five players along the offensive line and at the tight end position as well. We're now going to throw it to our Mr. Irrelevant, Lance Zierlein from NFL.com and the Sideline View. He's going to give a good overall offensive line preview, not just for this draft class, but what the Eagles could be looking for at those positions as well.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
We're pleased to be joined here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com by NFL.com analyst, also from the Sideline View, Lance Zierlein. Lance, first and foremost, you're doing all the draft bios, all the analysis, the scouting reports for the players on NFL.com. Just take me through the process of having to scout and grade and come up with all the different elements that you do for those bios.
My process for a single player, I'll break it down to a single player. What I'll do is, I'll go Google the player. I'll go to his bio. I'll go look at what happened in high school to give me an idea. I try to build a profile of the player, of the person. Then I'll see how he did. I'll see when he started to become a factor for that team, how much of a factor he was, what type of awards he won. Then I'll go Google news items, and I want to see, is there anything about his character that I need to know? Bad character, good character? Because there's a lot of really good articles about guys as well. So I want to know that. I want to know if there's some offbeat things that are interesting. And then once I have an idea of who the player is as a person or how his career has gone up to that point, I turn the tape on and I look for myself. And so sometimes I go back to 2013, sometimes I don't. And I look at the tape. I use some StatSize data points as well to try to see if to disprove some things or prove some things to see if it matches up with what I'm seeing. And that way I feel like I've got an entire picture. You put your time in on the tape. You go look for relevant data points. and then you go get a profile of the player and the person, and then from there, you know, from there you go to stage two, which is understanding what the NFL norm is for a position, and is this a starting caliber player, or does he have projectable traits to be a starter with more coaching, or is he physically limited? So I think a lot of it goes into a single, you know, every player is going to take me a minimum of an hour and a half. That's just how it goes. You've got to put
your
time in.
And how many have you done at this point?
I've done about 400.
Yeah.
Including four punters and four kickers so far. I did that before I got to the combine. And then and I've still got 100, 120 to go when I get back.
Now, when you select which games to watch, how do you go through that part of it? Because obviously some players are going to have great games, they're going to have bad games. You know, do you try to look up statistically which games they
no,
do well?
No, I don't want to go in with – no, I want to – unless there's a reason I need to go see why this guy only had two catches, a wide receiver, usually I'll go look at their best competition.
Okay.
You know, and if you do this long enough, you know which teams have the best talent opposite from them. And so if it's a running back, I want to go see him against the best defenses or against the fastest defenses. And so I might look at three games against a certain level of competition, but – With my film system, I can also, you know, I can also short circuit it, and I can just say, look, I want to see every rush this running back had. And so with Tevin Coleman, for example, from Indiana,
yep.
You know, I watched every run that he had in 2000, and that's a lot of them in 2014. And once you do that, you get a great picture of the player. For a wide receiver, Titus Davis from Central Michigan, I watch every target, whether it's incomplete, whether it's an interception, whether it's a catch. I watch every target, and so you can kind of shortcut the process there as well.
Lance, we're previewing the offensive lineman on our show today. What's your take going into the draft on the Eagles' offensive line, a zone blocking scheme, and the way that they perform? You had a couple Pro Bowl players in Jason Pierce, Jason Kelce.
Yeah.
You know, Lane Johnson. You know, made some strides after he came off the suspension. Overall, what's your take on the Eagles' offensive line?
Well, I think you just have to always continue to try to be diligent on the interior. You know, the right guard spot's been one that I think they're looking to really get a firm handle on. You've had Mathis and Kelce, the athletes over there on the other side. And so I think with the Eagles, it's about making sure that you've got the right depth behind these guys. I'm blanking out who the guy who came in last year and filled in, gave some tackle reps and then some guard reps. Not
Andrew Gardner. Not Gardner,
a tackle. There was a guard who came in. I'm trying to remember the backup guard who came in as well.
Tobin?
Yeah, it was Matt Tobin. It was Matt Tobin who came in. I thought he had some good reps, and then there are other times I thought he struggled a little bit. But, you know, making sure that you have the next man up scenario for the Eagles is important. But I kind of feel like it's so specialized, they know exactly what they're looking for, that I almost feel like it's easier for them than it is going to be for a team who wants to do a little power blocking, a little bit of zone. Mm-hmm. The Eagles say, this is who we are, this is how we block. And I think in that way, it allows them to really pare down who they're looking at.
With that in mind, Lance, what makes a good zone-blocking offensive lineman? When you scout the offensive lineman, what are the traits that fans might want to look at?
Yeah, physical traits are going to be lateral agility. It doesn't have to necessarily – a lot of times it'll manifest itself in a 40 time. But you want to see guys who move laterally quickly. Good snap to step quickness. You know, how quickly do you take that step and get up on the second level? So I think lateral quickness, I think the ability to sustain blocks is very important because you're on the move. Can you keep that guy glued to your hands or to your arm as you continue to move? So sustainability of a block. And then finally, I'd say the one that is the hardest to really get a good feel for is timing. You know, zone blocking is about timing. You get your down block to secure. When do you climb up on the linebacker? How quickly do you climb up? And sometimes you have to make adjustments during a game, so I think intelligence plays into it as well. Hey, this linebacker's a lot faster than the guys I usually do. I'm not going to spend as much time here securing that down block. I'm going to maybe put a hand on him and get right up. And other times you'll have linebackers who sit back and you say, boy, I'm going to really secure this block, and then I'll climb up. So understanding timing is a big part of being a good zone blocker as well.
Lance, as you look at this year's draft class, who are some of the offensive linemen? And we'll focus maybe on the early round guys who might be a good fit for the Eagles' zone blocking team.
Early round?
Yes.
Let me go into my...
Seems like a lot of athletic linemen coming out, sort of trying to figure out where they fit into the pantheon of which scheme they might be able to fall into. But
yeah, I would say, you know, I think DJ Humphreys, the tackle from Florida, fits. I think Eric Flowers could fit. I think he can do a little bit of both. He's got really good feet. He just doesn't play as quickly as you think he's going to sometimes. I think Cam Irvin could actually be one of those rare hybrid players who can be, I think he could be a guard or a center for what Philadelphia likes to do. But the other thing is I think he could, you know, some zone teams are looking to get a little more physical. They still want to be able to move, but they want to win some physical battles. He's one of those rare guys that I think can move well enough in space that he could be a zone player, but he also has a little more physicality than you're used to seeing sometimes from some of the centers and then potentially, you know, guards. Some other tackles, I would say TJ Clemmings easily could be a zone scheme tackle, could play in that situation. I think Lyle Collins, the tackle who I believe is a guard on the next level, I think Lyle Collins could be a zone scheme guard. You know, you don't have to look for the thinnest guys. You want to look for guys who move well, but more and more, you don't want to sacrifice all the way your physicality, because when you get in short yardage situations,
you gotta win those battles. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Texans had trouble with it for a long time until they got Arian Foster. And I know the Eagles want to be able to, we want to win from the 20 to the 20, but we want to be able to win from 3 yards and in as well.
My last question for you, Lance, looking at some of these guys who, you know, potentially could be fits, I guess really it's how difficult it is to project how they're going to go to the next level, so to speak, and how they're going to be able to make that transition.
Well, you know, if they played in schemes, Jake Fisher and Hronas Grasu from Oregon, you know, those are two guys that you could say.
From Oregon, first four.
I could obviously see them fitting into Chip's offense.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly. Projecting to the next level on the offensive line, I think one thing you have to project on the next level is how tough is a guy physically. The guys in the NFL, it turns into a much more physical game, and you need to make sure that a guy is. It's okay to be finesse as long as you can call in that physicality when you need to and that toughness. And you can be tough and still be a tough guy who still is a move player. So I think the toughness has to be there. And then core strength, you have to have a level of core strength, whether you're playing in the most hardcore, you know, hard-hitting power offense, or if you're playing in Chip's zone scheme, you still need to have a certain level of core strength that is necessary. So if you have that, you can project. But really, I think toughness and level of competition, you know, sometimes that can trick you a little bit. If you haven't played against a level of competition, I think that's one of the reasons Eric Fisher is struggling, quite frankly. I think Eric Fisher didn't see the best competition, and it looks like it shows when I watch him on Sunday. I think he's been slow to come around to this level of competition.
Interesting.
And if you're slow to come around to that level of competition, then we're talking about confidence issues. And once it gets in your head, as an offensive lineman, it's hard to shake confidence issues.
Lance Zierlein does a phenomenal job doing the scouting reports, not just NFL.com. You can also find his work on the sidelineview.com as well. Thank you very much for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, for tonight's Pick 6, Fran and I decided to look at 6 offensive linemen who might have to make a position change along the line at the next level. So typically, you're making it from tackle inside the guard. You know, there might be some changes within that. But, Fran, I'll let you kickstart things off here.
All right, well, the one guy is a guy we talked about early in the show, and that's Lael Collins at 6'4 and a half. He had 33-inch arms, just over 33 inches. So for some teams, that may disqualify him from playing the tackle position. Some teams that might not be the case, but I think he's shown the ability to play inside a guard. He played there in 2012. Tough guy, athletic, powerful. We talked about him earlier. I think he's got the ability to play all along the offensive line.
Well, I picked Collins as well, so I'll go with my number two guy, Pittsburgh TJ Clemmings. Again, someone who was at the Senior Bowl, is still developing. You know, is he the type of guy who maybe starts his career inside a guard and it makes that, you know, down the line in a couple years could transition out to the tackle position?
Yeah, he's going to be that's a really interesting pick because I think he's got the ability to do that. He's definitely got the athleticism, definitely has the toughness to pull that off. The next guy I'm going to go with, Tyler Sambrello from Colorado State. just under 6'6", 309 pounds, but he's got a little bit of, you know, in terms of his length, his arms are a little bit shorter than maybe you'd like for the tackle position, but he's got really good athleticism. Again, he's got the ability to play on both sides of the line because he would get used as a tackle eligible at times. So showed the ability to play the left, showed the ability to play on the right side, and really just a tough, nasty guy, showed the ability to play, finish blocks. I liked what I saw from Sambrello.
Award-winning skier at one point.
Yeah, unbelievable at that size.
It's crazy. Next on my list, number three, Florida State's Cam Irving. He actually was a left tackle at one point, went inside to center for the Seminoles. I think he could be a guard at the next level.
I think so too. And you know, when I watched him as a tackle, I remember thinking that he may be a better fitted guard. So I was glad to kind of see him shift inside to play center, and he did a really good job for Florida State at that position. So I'll be excited to see what he ultimately plays at the next level. The next guy I'm going to talk about, Jameel Douglas from Arizona State. 6'4", 307 pounds, really tough guy, powerful at the point of attack. I don't know that he's a great space player. He shows the ability to get to the second level, but will struggle locating at times and, you know, and sustaining blocks in space. But he played some guard in 2013. He moved outside to tackle last year. I think he's got the ability to play inside.
I'm going to go next. Penn State's Donovan Smith started 31 games for the Nittany Lions. Someone who, again, just one of those players who – athletically, it seems like he'll just transition to the inside after playing tackle at the college level.
The more I watch Smith, the more I like him, by the way. You know, I wasn't super crazy about him when I first watched him. Went down to the Senior Bowl, and I thought he did a good job. And then I watched him a little bit more, and I think he's got the chance to be a pretty good player. So I'm excited to see what Smith does ultimately in the future. But another guy, the next guy I'm going to go with, Jeremiah Pitossi from Utah. Tony Pauline, our good friend, you know, from DraftInsider.net, we'll be hearing from him as the week progresses here. But Jeremiah Pitossi, he compared him to a Mike Iupati, and a guy. And I'm glad that he brought that up because when I watched Pitossi, I think ultimately, while he played left tackle last year, he played right tackle in 2012. Ultimately, I think his best bet is to slide inside the guard, just because I don't, you know, technique, he's still got to improve in a lot of areas there. He's just not a great athlete at this point. I think that really his better fit will be inside.
All right, number five, possible first overall lineman to come off the board here, Brandon Scherff. A lot of people, again, we talked about as one of our top tackles overall, but could he be the guy? Could he be this year's Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys, who goes in and plays right away inside and can make an impact for a team?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that he'll be an interesting guy in terms of where he ultimately ends up. I think I've stated it on this show before. I think Scherff can play outside of tackle, but like Zach Martin last year, I think he could be an all-pro at guard as well. So I think Scherff is a guy definitely to watch in the future. I'm going to go with a guy, and most of these guys that we've talked about have been tackle to guard conversions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Hronus Grasu from Oregon, 6'3", came in over 300 pounds yesterday when he got measured in here at the Combine. Athletic guy. I talked about him earlier. Good technique, very clean prospect, showed the ability to play with competitive toughness. So I really, really like Hronus Grasu. I think he could potentially play guard. While he played center his whole career, I think he's got the frame to play guard.
Why don't we go with his teammate, Jake Fisher.
Ah, very nice.
Number six there, 6'6", 300 pounds. Now, he does have guard experience, but the fact is he played both tackle positions this past season, was a huge cog. He had to miss some time due to an injury. The offensive line struggled in his absence. He came back, and there were some who joked that he should have been in the Heisman conversation along with Marcus Mariota. Jake didn't want to take it that far, but certainly a valuable piece of the Ducks' offensive line. If he could possibly transition to guard next level, he could be one of these, you know, transition-type guys at the next level.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think Fisher will be very interesting to see in terms of what he ultimately plays, just because he played on both sides of the line. But my final guy from UNLV, we were supposed to see him at the Shrine game, and he bowed out at the last minute. That's Brett Boyko, again, from UNLV, a Canadian offensive lineman.
Brother?
Not Derek's brother.
Okay.
Close, but not his brother. 6'7", 301 pounds. He's got 32-inch arms, and that, you know, ultimately that's going to kind of forced that move inside. But a guy who lined up at left tackle, started 42 games for UNLV, has good initial quickness, came off the ball really well, understands angles and space, showed good hand placement in the run game. The big question, you know, can he get stronger? I think he's got the requisite athleticism, but you want to see him develop a little bit more strength at the point of attack and develop as a drive blocker.
Well, let me slip one more in there since we both had Collins at the top. How about Ollie Marpet, D3?
Nice.
You saw him at the Senior Bowl. Was a left tackle there, could play all five positions, probably goes inside to the next level. Actually compared himself to Justin Pugh, who went in the second round to the New York Giants.
I believe so, yeah.
Who is an Eagles fan.
That's right.
But Marpet should come in and to the NFL and be able to play on the inside right away. So those are our pick six. I threw a seventh one in there just to have a little bit of difference. But we're going to stick with the offensive line theme as we go into our first unofficial visit. And we're going to visit with West Virginia's Mark Lewinsky to talk about what it was like playing in that system, some of the intricacies of playing along the offensive line. So here is our unofficial visit with Mark Lewinsky.
The unofficial visit.
Please be joined by Mark Lewinsky, offensive lineman from West Virginia. And Mark, you're Wilkes-Barre native.
Yes, sir.
So, first and foremost, I got to ask the question, are you an Eagles fan?
Honestly, I was like, if I was always a Dolphins fan, but my second team would have to be the Eagles. I always made, even if I, you know, if there was a little grudge, I always rooted for the Eagles regardless, because it was close at home.
So, how did you end up a Dolphins fan?
My dad, he lived down in Florida for a little bit, and he was into everything, Dolphins, Dan Marino, and all that stuff. So
there's a little family connection. Your dad, at least,
yeah,
so we can blame it on that. So,
but honestly, I know he would love if I went to the Eagles, especially because he lives right across the bridge, and he lives in Mapleshade, New Jersey. So he's right there, and he always hears everything about the Eagles, and he would love for me to be close to him. But it was definitely be a great opportunity.
Mark, how did you end up at West Virginia?
I started out at Lackawanna Junior College, and as time went along, I was getting a lot of scholarship offers, and they seemed most interested in me, and it would be the best opportunity for me, so I decided that I wanted to go to West Virginia and make it my home.
So when you went to West Virginia, you transitioned from a tackle to a guard, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So what was that transition like, and how do you think that's helped prepare you for, you know, possible future now in the NFL?
It's definitely, you know, it gives me like different perspectives from, you know, being at tackle, understanding what the tackle was all about. And I felt like it was pretty smooth, actually, moving to guard. It just felt pretty natural, and I just gave it my 100%.
How would you describe the difference playing on the island versus playing inside, where you know things are going to happen a lot quicker?
It's definitely two different worlds in a sense, but I don't know, I just take it to the best of my ability, just make sure that I was in it 100%. And I would say the speed might be a little bit different. Maybe, you know, you might be kicking back a little bit more and tackle compared to maybe soaring a little bit out at guard.
Do you like the one-on-one nature of being on a tackle versus playing on the inside where you know that everything is going to be?
No, I honestly didn't mind it.
Yeah.
I like being one-on-one. Like, I always loved doing the one-on-one pass rush in at school. It was one of my favorite things. So, regardless if I was in or out. But sometimes you have that more opportunity to get the lick if you're in guard, especially if you're, you know, just looking to check in for help.
Now, you're known as a powerful player. How were you able to develop that power over the years?
I would put some of it to the weight room and also just mentally prepare myself and push myself, you know, just keep working harder and harder on the field and just escalating it from there.
So you got to play in a high-octane offense at West Virginia. Seeing how some of the spread concepts have come into the NFL, especially in Philadelphia, how do you think that's going to help you with the transition?
It's definitely a growing trend, and it's something that I've been used to, so it would be kind of easy to just, you know, get right into it, and I have a basic understanding of what's going on.
Mark Lewinsky, guard from West Virginia, thanks for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
On the clock.
All right, special thanks to Mark for checking in with us on the podcast. Now we're going to go into our On the Clock, where we're going to do a little did you know. We're going to introduce you to some of the prospects, some we've already talked about in the program. That'll be a hint for Fran.
Okay.
Last time we did this on the podcast, I did all, like, background stuff, some, like, you know, different facts about what they did off the field, some, you know, things off the field. We're going to mix a little of the on-field. We'll mix some of the combine numbers, you know.
All right.
So we'll sprinkle a little all flavor.
Interesting.
In
okay.
For this one.
I'm excited for this.
So first one, he was the tallest tight end at the combine at 6'7".
That'll be Jesse James.
That is Jesse James. That is correct.
Penn State.
Penn State, you know, talked about him as your number five tight end. Your scouting report lines up in line at wing, can get off press with ease, explosive out of the block, shows ability to be strong, a strong blocker at the point of attack.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, when I watched him, I expected him to be a little bit better at the point of attack than he was, but I think ultimately that's what his strength is going to be moving forward. He showed the ability to be a vertical threat in 2013, less so in 2014 just because of the change in the offensive scheme. But I think he should be a better blocker than he is, and he has the ability to be a better pro than he was a college player.
All right, number two, former high school quarterback recruit.
Okay.
Father and uncle played in the NFL.
Okay.
Your scouting report, a fluid athlete with natural movement skills.
Former high school quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not Brett Boyko.
It is not Derek Boyko or Brett Boyko.
It's not Derek Boyko. This is a guy along the offensive line. He was a high school quarterback. I got nothing. Who is it?
Blake Bell.
Ah, I didn't realize we were going to the tight end position. Okay, Blake Bell. Very nice.
Oh, I was saying
these are all tight ends.
All tight ends. Sorry about that.
All right.
We've given the offensive line their love and pick six. It's all tight ends. So my fault.
So Blake Bell. That's a good one. Blake Bell. Really, the thing that stands out to me, look, when we go down to these All-Star games, we get to see these guys in person for the first time. It's rare that the very first impression sticks with me as much as Blake Bell's did. And one of the first things I saw from Blake Bell was a special teams period where he started flat on his back and ran 60 yards downfield. Yeah, obviously he wasn't making a tackle because it was a practice period, but just seeing his movement, you can kind of see, and sometimes it's tough to see what a tight end moves like, you know, when he's playing on the offensive side of the ball, just because, you know, he's asked to do certain things, sometimes not asked to do too much down the field. Just being able to see him move in space was very impressive for me.
Number three of five here.
Okay.
Tight end. All right.
Tight end,
so
sure. Okay. Clear on that. That's on the table.
He's 27 years old.
All right. That's Gene Siffrin.
That's a shout out to Bo Wolf. That's Bo's favorite player. Yes.
Yeah, and we talked about Siffrin earlier. Yeah. I think you know, he offers some value from a pass catching standpoint. I mean, he made some unbelievable catches this year, showing the ability to go up and get the football. But right now, he is just a one dimensional player. He'll have to get better as a blocker.
And he's 10 years older than most of the other prospects.
He's older than Rob Gronkowski. So there's that.
Number four. Okay, this prospect tied for the biggest hands. 10 3/4 inches.
Okay.
He was a first-year starter in 2014.
Okay.
He comes from a family of musicians. He can separate the top of the stem.
This is Ben Koyak.
Nice job. Nicely done.
Thank you. Yeah, Ben Koyak, a guy we saw down at the Senior Bowl. I thought he did a decent job. You know, I think he's one of those I said this about Nick O'Leary earlier, one of those jack-of-all-trades, you know, but master of none, I think, is the case with Koyak, where I think he's, you know, got some good hands. He's got some natural athleticism. I think he can do some things at the point of attack, but ultimately he still has to just get better at every single area in his game.
All right, our last one, 20 years old, checked in at 6'3", 249 pounds, a third-generation NFL player. Your scouting report is he lined up as his wing, inline, slot, and even fullback. He maximizes his catch radius, makes incredible grabs away from his frame.
This would be Max Williams.
Yes, with two X's.
And, you know, double X's. But Max Williams, a guy who I didn't get to watch until middle of the week last week leading up to the combine. You know, and I had heard, look, I had seen some, you know, some highlights on TV, so I knew, you know, his ability to go up and get the football. And obviously I knew that he was universally thought of as the top tight end in this class. He was really, really impressive to me when I watched him. And a guy, look, Eric Ebron last year coming out of North Carolina, very physically impressive. And he's got more upside than Williams because of that body. But Williams, I think he's a better player right now than Ebron was. Ebron went 9th overall. Again, I don't know that Williams is going to go 9th overall because he doesn't have that frame. But Williams, I love the way that he played, showed the ability to go up and get the football, really loved the way that he attacked defenders as a blocker. Just really the way that he played the game was very, very impressive to me.
All right, so our second and final unofficial visit of the evening will be with Tyler Croft of Rutgers, who is a native of Downingtown, Pennsylvania. And to start things off, we go back in time, go back to his high school days to recall a specific play in a high school state playoff game.
the unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined by former Rutgers tight end Tyler Croft. And Tyler, a product of Downingtown East High School. Let's go back in time. 2009, state playoffs. Do you remember the game winning? You get a smile on your face. Do you remember a particular game winning touchdown that really sparked your career?
Yes, Pencrest back in, like you said, 2009 playoffs. Last second of the game, we threw a, I ran a wheel route up the sideline, and quarterback Trey Laletta, he was playing at Bucknell, but he threw me up a deep ball, and I caught it over a few defenders to win. So it was great. And then ultimately, went for a 2-point conversion to win the game, and Drew Harris brought that in for us.
So what did that do for you from a confidence standpoint? And was that the moment that really got you going, would you say?
I think it's one of the moments. I think it's been a kind of a process. Like, obviously, playing for a lot of years, you have a lot of big moments like that. But, no, that definitely was a great moment, especially for football. I love, like, Downingtown East. I love my brothers on that team. So the fact that we were able to bring a win in like that was awesome.
All right, growing up in Downingtown, were you an Eagles fan?
We had them on the television a lot, but...
Okay. So went to Rutgers, yes. Very productive. Just talk about the versatility, that skill set that you would bring to the NFL.
I think I'd bring a tight end that could do a little bit of everything. I want to be a complete tight end in the NFL. I know that the guys are going to be bigger, stronger, faster there. So I know getting myself bigger and stronger is going to play a lot into that. In 2013, I was flexed out and moving a lot, and that's when I had a lot of the numbers. This year, I was in line playing a lot of pro style. We were in a pro-style offense, so I was playing in-line a lot more. So a lot of people get caught up on the production, but schematically, we kind of changed up a little bit. So I attribute a little bit to that. Just my role kind of shifted from last year to this year.
How much do you think that'll help, though, the fact that you have that in-line experience, that blocking? Because there's some really good, some prolific receiving tight ends nowadays, but they don't have that blocking experience.
I think that'll really help, to be honest. Like, I think... My ultimate goal is to be a complete tight end, be a three-down tight end. I think having that year experience, especially in the Big Ten, and being able to block, I think that really will help me.
So when you're lined up on the outside, what are some of the things you look to break down the opposition, whether it's a linebacker or safeties across from you?
I think setting up the defenders plays a big part into the ability to get open, whether it's selling an in route when I know I'm breaking out, or you being physical at the top of the route. You never want to let them get their hands on you. So I think my ability with a little bit longer arms and being able to use my body well, that's always what helped me.
And then what's the secret to blocking now that you have that inline experience?
Technique. I always rely on low pad level and technique. That's something that I really focused on this year. And being the ability to get under guys is what really helped me.
Tyler Croft, former Rutgers tight end, thanks for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, to close things out, we're going to go into the draft mailbag, and we're going to kick things off with PA's Finest at MBFF01. And we've talked a lot about Max Williams already on the program. If he was there at number 20, he would be a nice compliment to Ertz with the ability to flex Ertz. Selleck's not getting any younger. Your thoughts on Max Williams as a potential Eagles target at number 20.
Well, I really, really like Max Williams. That being said, I would be very surprised to see him become an Eagle just because I really think very highly of him. I don't know that they would draft a tight end at 20 with Ertz on the roster. We saw Trey Burton obviously make a splash on special teams this year. I think the arrow is pointing up on his abilities moving forward. So, and obviously, Brent Celek is still one of the very best in the game, especially as a blocker. So, really, I think I would be very, very surprised to see Max Williams here. That being said, you know how I feel about him.
I would agree. I feel like there's going to be another prospect at a different position, just going to be higher on the Eagles list at that point, number 20.
I do like your thinking, though.
Yes.
I like where your
certainly.
Head's at.
Certainly.
I like where your
don't
head's
rule,
at.
Can't rule anything out.
Can't rule it out, but I would be surprised, to say the least.
All right. Number two, this comes from Oh Wow Hmm on Twitter. Two things. First, that Jeff Huerman went to his high school.
Nice.
Second, which offensive line drills should we be looking at to find potential Eagles?
Well, I think, when you split these drills up, you split them into the time drills that everybody runs, the three cone, the 40, the bench press, all those different things. And then you have the position-specific drills. With the time drills, I think the one drill you'd want to look at is the three cone, just so you can see that natural agility. How does he move laterally? What is his change of direction like? That's something that you can definitely see from the three cone. So I would look there first in terms of the time drills. And then in terms of the position specific drills, you know, anything where you're going to see them out in space. So you see there's a couple of those drills that they'll run. There's obviously the one that everyone points to when they're trying to find who can play tackle is, you know, that pass protection drill where you're asking the lineman to go from point A to point B and to show the ability to protect the edge. I don't know that that's as important for, you know, fans that are looking for potential Eagles, because obviously you have Lane Johnson, you have Jason Peters. You know, maybe the drill where the guy's retreating backwards and he's asked to flip his hips, so you can kind of see what his flexibility is like there. And then the ability where the drill where you see them pull and get out in space, because obviously that's a big part of the Eagles game. Not necessarily a pulling guard, you know, for a power run game, but for the sweeps, for those outside zone plays, for the screen game, the ability to get out in space. Those are the three areas where I think you should look for a potential Eagle offensive lineman.
Jeff Huerman, by the way, went to Barron Collier High School in Naples, Florida.
There you go.
So our third one, friend of the podcast at Penser76, wants to know your thoughts on tight end Clive Walford.
Well, we talked about Walford earlier. I mean, I think he's got the ability to be, you know, you talk about when you're looking at baseball prospects, a five-tool player. I think Walford has the ability to be a five-tool player just because of his ability as a blocker. You can see him get downfield. In Mobile, you saw the ability to set. I mean, he made some of those, whether it was a safety, linebackers, corners, he made guys look silly in those one-on-one periods. So Walford, I think, as a guy, like I said, as a receiver, as a blocker in the run game, in pass protection, shows the ability to bring added value in all those areas of the game.
All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. On Friday's show, we're going to preview the big skill positions, the wide receivers, the running backs, and the quarterback drills. So we're going to have one-on-one interviews and a whole lot more to get you ready. So until then, for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Everyone, have a great Eagles night.